We're in a moment where it's now very uncool to call out racism and sexism because it sounds then that you are taking it too seriously, you don't understand it. The license to say these things has become so prevalent everywhere. Comedy, television, the internet, that if something is not done about it, it could be and probably is really damaging.
If you stepped into a massively multiplayer online role-playing game like Call of Duty without any context, there's a good chance you'd catch some of the worst language you've ever heard in your life. Offensive, violent, sexist, homophobic, and racist are some of the terms used to describe the chatter that goes on between players in these virtual war zones. We're about to play an excerpt from a conversation held during the game Call of Duty played on Xbox Live. Sensitive listeners may want to fast forward through about 15 seconds.
Why is everything every insult you've ever came up with has to do with gays? Are you fascinated with gays?
Gay nigger, dude.
Nigger, you know why he's right?
White power.
I like niggers. I like niggers. I think everybody should own a nigger.
Such ear-burning language could be interpreted not so much as bigoted as some combination of machismo, trash talk, and heightened aggression, all typical in the gaming environment. And of course, there are the many theories on the collapse of civility brought on by online forums. For example, Godwin's Law, from author Mike Godwin's 1990 assertion that as an online discussion grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazis or Hitler approaches one. In 2004, the authors of the online comic Penny Arcade commented on the antisocial tendencies of gamers by proposing the greater internet fuckwad theory, that if you give any normal person complete anonymity and an audience, they will inevitably prove themselves to be a total fuckwad. Pardon my French. In some internet discussion boards, and even on Twitter, bigoted terms can be found strung out as meaningless epithets, without any clear target or reference. In this form, such behavior has been termed griefing. Today's guest has studied the origins of griefing and found many gamers and forum trolls do not in fact think of themselves as racist, homophobic, or sexist, and disagree vehemently when they are accused of trafficking in hate speech. They merely seek to disrupt or garner attention, and as anybody who has spent time in forums or chat rooms knows, attention online is priceless. Lisa Nakamura is a professor in the Institute of Communication Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and author of the book Digitizing Race: Visual Cultures of the Internet. She was taken by surprise when griefing behavior reared its head at a conference she was attending at MIT called RaffleCon. She recently sat down with David Weinberger to explain what happened.
RaffleCon is a really interesting, fun conference held at MIT run by students, and it's about internet culture, specifically memes, which are user-generated kind of pop culture things like lolcats or I Can Ask Cheeseburger or all the stuff people used to waste time with at work. So I went to this conference, and it was the second time it was done at MIT, and I was in a panel called I Can Has Dream, which is about race. So there were,
which is a lolcats formulation of I Have a Dream.
That's
turns
right.
Into I Can
yeah.
Has Dream.
So it's taking the meme, I Can Has Cheeseburger, and using it or mashing it up with Obama, right? A recognition that we're in a different racial moment than we've been in a long time. And also Martin Luther King, I mean, I assume. So this is the first time I think RaffleCon had ever had a panel that was about something really serious like this, because race is generally not seen as funny. And so they invited Bartunde Thurston from The Onion, who does Jack and Joe Politics, a blog, Serena and Teresa Wu, who do My Mom Was a Fob, and Christian Lander of Things White People Like. And so I was the lucky moderator who just let them. Well, you were there, right? They just were hilarious.
They were hilarious. So two Asian women, a black guy and a white guy.
Right.
Walk into a conference and,
right.
And you were the moderator.
That's right. It was a really well-attended panel, more than I thought. I think people sometimes think race is depressing and they don't want to be there. They feel like they're going to get yelled at. But because it was about race humor, I think it was a freeing moment. And it was then that I realized that humor is a really licensing mode for people. It allows them to talk about things they don't really want to or feel they can talk about. But the reason I was interested in what happened at the conference was not that, but during the plenary session, there was a hijacking of the Twitter feed where a bunch of anonymous people just posted the word nigger, 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 like 7 or 8 times during the panel. And so,
and pardon me, this keynote was not about race.
No,
it was at least not obviously about race. It was the founder of 4chan.
Right. Yeah.
Known as Moot.
Right. Yeah.
Who is a young white male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who has his name because everybody's anonymous and takes a name, or in fact has no name. But the griefing or disruption of the event happened online, and that was the posting of the word nigger, nigger, nigger in the Twitter feed. So that was what I was interested in, was why this happened, why no one could say anything about it.
So there was no reaction on the Twitter feed to this sudden explosion of maybe one of the two most forbidden words in American English.
Yeah, there wasn't. And I think it's got a lot to do with, on the one hand, people at this conference knowing that attention is the oxygen of griefing, that once you pay attention to anybody's griefing, it just encourages them, you get much more of it. And also a genuine kind of powerlessness in the face of this, because to protest it or to talk about it as wrong is to take it seriously, and internet memes and culture are about not taking things seriously.
So first, say a little bit more about griefing.
Okay. Griefing is the systematic harassment or trolling, right, trolling for attention of people online, sometimes just to get attention and be a jerk, but other times it's, as some of these groups say, to puncture people's stupid illusions about the internet as being a separate world. So Second Life in particular has been vulnerable to people coming in and ruining it by filling it with garbage and scripts and kind of messing with the code so that it makes people unable to use it. So it's kind of like vandalism, but it's often targeted against specific groups of people who are hated, such as the furries. They're players who dress up in animals and sometimes have sex with each other. And this group from 4chan called the Patriotic Nigras have systematically harassed the furries, and they put lots of videos up online that you can find that says "Die Fur Fags." So griefing's been around for a long time, and this is just one example. But it's,
On Usenet, which long before the web, there were famous cases of griefing. Although I don't think it was called that, where the discussion group for cats would be disrupted by messages from people who chose it simply because apparently it was so innocent and they were so happy. It was no political statement. It wasn't cats or political. It was simply to cause grief to a group that was absorbed in their own happiness and so innocent and naive. And griefing has some of that as well. It's not a political action aimed at disrupting people whose politics you hate. It's much more of a cultural statement. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. That people are bored and they want to take it out on people who are doing innocent things, as you say. And so they'll insert themselves in conversations they don't belong, and they'll try and bother people, partly because they want attention, and attention is money. Like, attention is the currency of the internet, and people want it any way they can get it.
So griefers show up in the Twitter stream of RaffleCon, presumably people who are not actually at the conference. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So this is really just a stream coming in from to disrupt it by saying one of the worst things they possibly can. People don't react, in part because that would feed their attention, mm-hmm. But also because of doing so would be to – I'm just repeating you, right? Mm-hmm. So doing so would be to acknowledge that they are taking – it all too seriously.
Right. They're taking it too seriously, and that they are outside of the culture. Because if you're in the culture of internet memes, you're supposed to know that no one in it really means it.
So the people who were there disrupting with the N-word, mm-hmm. Pardon me, I'm still pretty uncomfortable
right,
even in an academic
they are,
setting.
Right, are
they racist?
I'm claiming that they are exhibiting what Susan Douglas would call enlightened racism and enlightened sexism. She has a book out called Enlightened Sexism, and it's about how the women's movement has succeeded to the extent that now people feel comfortable being extremely sexist and extremely mean to women, over the top, right, representing women as bimbos and hoes, precisely because they feel that women have done so well, and that no one takes it seriously when you have something like The Man Show and women bouncing around a trampoline and a bikini. This just seems overtly unserious, that no one could possibly be offended because women have done so well. And she says this is absolutely horrible because it's taking back some of the gains women have made. And in fact, women are not equal now, right? They still make much less money than men do. So it's a way to undermine feminism. It's a way to make feminism uncool, because if you say this is sexist or gross, then you're just old, right? You're out of the mainstream and you don't get it. It's a way of marginalizing critique of feminism. And so what happened with the Twitter stream, I'm arguing, is very like that, only it's about racism, that if you take it seriously and say this is wrong, then you've proven that you don't understand it, that you're not part of the culture, and now no one can take you seriously. So an example I think about all the time is I was playing World of Warcraft, and there was a character who had a very offensive name. I won't say what it is. And I told him, I don't want to heal you in this dungeon because your name is really offensive. I just want you to know. And he started yelling at me saying, how old are you? How old are you? Grow up. You know, don't you realize that it's wrong for you to yell at me? Because obviously you don't understand how racism and sexism work. Like, you're the one who has a problem. And I was just like amazed. So I thought about how it's possible to have that reaction, to say overtly racist, sexist things and know that you don't mean them and expect others will get that, right? So what I'm saying is that the internet lets people say these things, nigger, 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 right? Partly because we all have to agree that it's not real. So there were many black people at this conference, and none of them said anything. I don't think any of them were really afraid, as they might have been if it had been a different kind of harassment, because it was so over the top. Again, it could not be taken as a serious sign of racism. And in other interviews, the patriotic Negras who do this have said, we're not racist. We're just trying to get your attention. That's what the N-word does now, and that's why we use it. It's not about race anymore. It's about hijacking the attention economy, jumping to the front of the queue, and you're the one who has a problem if you don't like that we're doing that.
Is there a problem with doing that? One could make the case that they are, by especially the repeated use of the term, in a way that they expect their audience will take it as not racist. You know, it just still strikes me as weird, but, you know, I'm old. That by the repeated use of it has the effect of lessening the harm that the word itself does, that it sort of neutralizes the word. Is there a possible benefit to this?
No.
I tried. No. Sorry, Lisa, I tried.
I think that everyone would like to see it that way, because no one likes to think of, you know, our precious youth on the internet doing that. It doesn't sound like a good thing for society, and it doesn't sound like a good use of the internet. But I have to say, I don't think so. I think it licenses behavior which people get a kind of a thrill out of knowing is wrong, yet can divorce themselves from, by saying, but I'm not really racist. So when I say it, it doesn't mean anything. That's not the case. I mean, words still mean something. And especially if you're a white person, you have no right to say, I can use this word the way I see fit. You have to really consult with the people you're using it about and see how they feel about that. We're in a moment where it's now very uncool to call out racism and sexism, because it sounds then that you are taking it too seriously, you don't understand it. But I would say we have to do that, particularly because the license to say these things has become so prevalent everywhere. I mean, comedy, television, the internet, that if something is not done about it, it could be and probably is really damaging. I mean, there are a lot of gay people who play Halo and have to hear fag all the time. And I don't care how people feel about their right to say it. Having to hear it is a different thing.
So I've had the experience of some of the games I play. That's So Gay and Fag.
Can you tell, what is this game, by the way?
Oh, well, actually, I've been playing Quake Live, which is a retro game, right?
Quake, yeah.
Which is available on the web, and really good implementation. And that's a really anonymous game, and people, you can jump in and jump out, so it's pretty, no relationships are formed. But I also play Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2, where you occasionally get, and I assume kids, I'm going to say kids, who will use gay and fag and even occasionally nigger. And so I will confront them because I'm an old guy, you know, and I'm a liberal.
Do they use rape a lot? got raped on that map. Yeah.
Only occasionally. And the reaction almost always is, what are you talking about? I have nothing against gays. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, get over it. Mm-hmm. Or that's so gay. a meta reflection on it. And I guess I do believe that they don't view themselves as, and are not in important ways, they're not homophobic.
Right.
But there's no purchase. There's no way to discuss this or argue it.
Yeah, I thought about this quite a bit. Obviously, hearing a regulator or a person working for a network or even an older adult telling them not to do it is a reason to do it alone for a lot of these young griefer cultures, right? Or just cultures of you generally, like you're oppositional. However, I do think that within these cultures, there isn't a widespread I don't think there's a majority or even overwhelming approval of the words. I think, as you say, people have used them habitually and now are defensive about it. But I really don't believe people think that it's good to do, right? I think they'll defend it because they don't want to be in trouble. But I have to wonder how it is that youth cultures can themselves regulate this behavior on their own, right? There are some things that it's not okay to say in youth culture. And people enforce that vigorously and without needing to be told to do so. So how is it possible to change meme culture, griefing culture, so that this isn't right to do? I'm not sure about it, but I'm not sure I believe people when they say, I really am not homophobic and I don't mean it that way. And I'm going to say it even if you don't like it. And even if you're gay, like that to me is homophobic, right? To be told by someone who's gay, I don't like that. And just assert your right to do it anyway. It is itself a homophobic act. So even if the initial impulse to say it didn't come out of homophobia, the refusal to stop is definitely, I would see.
It's a pretty low level. I mean, in terms of ways people can be awful.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's worse. That's true. It is. But I think incivility is a meme that builds on itself as well, right? That you get increasingly a moving line. And again, I don't want to blame youth for it. I don't think it's their fault. I think that they are confused about what's racist and what isn't. And it's not entirely their fault that they are.
Unlike the older generation, which has that nailed entirely.
So. Well, I don't think we had it nailed entirely.
I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
In fact, I actually want to try a different way of explaining this. And I'm not sure why I'm trying to make it more okay, because I hate it. You know, it makes me extremely uncomfortable.
You're being a good interlocutor, that's why.
Well, because I'm confused.
Uh-huh.
So, and this is based on zero research. It's just sort of as a parent and watching various children grow up. I'm 59. When I was a kid, and you're, say, watching TV as a family, and there were a bunch of contestants on a quiz show, and one of them was black, and you want to talk about that one. The one thing you could not, I'm white, by the way, the one thing you could not say is, the black one. Right? Or if you did, you were very awkward about it.
Right.
You had to pretend you didn't see race, although, of course, more than ever, back when I was a kid, you did.
I think that my daughter was raised to do that. She's 8, and she used to refer to kids in her preschool class as brown. They weren't allowed to even use the word black to describe
other kids.
So
we're really confused, right?
Yes. I mean,
American culture is terribly, terribly confused and awkward about this. So I have seen among my children's cohort, it seems to me they are far less racist as a group than I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a racist in the normal realm of things. They seem to be far more comfortable, far more integrated and far less racially aware. But I will see them, they're not using the N-word for sure, but I will see them making references that make me uncomfortable, and I assume that this is them working out their discomfort. Mm-hmm. That being able to acknowledge through humor, because as you've said, that's sort of the currency of the net and generally, I think, the ability to actually acknowledge race in a way that their parents were forbidden to is new, and it's not well established, and it's not something their parents were able to lead them to, because we were so screwed up about it. And so this is them working out a extremely difficult problem.
I agree. I think
that's different than going on Twitter and using the N-word 8 times.
I know. But I think it's a continuum of things in some ways, right? What Susan Douglas says is that the reason you see so much unbelievably sexist television is that women are perceived as now being equal to men, right? By women and men, oftentimes. And based on this false perception, which is not borne out by economics or how many women are in the Fortune 500 or anything like that, there's a behavior as if to say this is all known between us as not sexism because it doesn't exist anymore. I think that, as you say, your children and their friends live in a significantly different racial time than we do. It's definitely a more tolerant time than what we had. That's not to say that it's where it needs to be, right? So it's mistaking gain for parity and behaving accordingly, which is to say as if these words have no power over anybody, but in fact they do have power over people, just not that these people, right? And this misunderstanding of racism as over and sexism as over is actually harming both gender equality and racial equality.
So you've laid out a problem that seems intractable because the response of the people who are grieving through racism or sexism or homophobia or any of it have set the rule so that if you object, then you simply don't get it and you're not part of the community and you have no standing to. You're old and yeah. you don't, you're a racist because you're objecting.
Right.
So how on earth do you deal with this? And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I've totally experienced that. How do you deal with that? It seems hopeless.
Yeah. I don't think that it's hopeless. I think one of the great things about the fact we can have this conversation is that the internet does put these things out in the open so that we can archive them and talk about them. I mean, the Twitter stream preserved this event so I could archive it and talk about it and show it to other people. I think that just like we socialize children of how to act at the park, we could certainly socialize them how to act online. And whether or not they did those things, you wouldn't know, but at least there'd be some attempt to talk about public life online. The fact that when you say anything like this, it will be there forever, right? The Twitter stream is still there, even though the event happened a month ago, and I could find who exactly said, nigger, 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 right? So do you really want, you can tell your kid, do you really want to be the person who said that for the rest of your life as a digital citizen? Is that how you want to be known? No, right? If you care about Facebook privacy, you should probably care about that too. I think children aren't aware sometimes of the consequences of what they do and say online. So there's one way to pose it, right? It's this education privacy issue. But I think the issue of civility is important.
Of course, if that argument worked, our children would not get tattoos. But that's a whole different topic.
Hey, so. I've got some tattoos myself, but I'm of the age of the age of reason. But I think as well, education and critical thinking are important because we don't have any other place to talk about race well. And people are doing race in these spaces because they can't talk about it any other place. I think the education system has pretty much failed kids. It just shames them and makes them feel bad. As some of my white students have said, I didn't enslave anybody. I feel guilty and it's not right. I hate my African American history class. I feel like a loser in that class. You know, it's not a productive way for people to learn about how to deal with race. So whether we like it or not, the internet is the forum where people are learning this, often learning it badly, but at least trying to learn, and we need to intervene in that conversation somehow. Hearing from someone's actual mouth, I don't like it when you call me a fag, right? May have a more strong effect on someone than hearing it from their teacher in junior high that you shouldn't do that. So it'd be interesting to see what educators could do in the way of linking people up. If they use the word fag, having a chat roulette with someone who's gay.
Thank you for this. It certainly was more use of words we've never used before than in any other Radio Burbank segment.
I'm proud.
And I'm sure that our listeners understand.
Thank you.
Lisa Nakamura is a professor in the Institute of Communication Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and author of the book Digitizing Race, Visual Cultures of the Internet. You can find links to her work, including a recent talk she gave at the Berkman Center, by visiting the Radio Berkman blog at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with David Weinberger at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.